Shabbos Parshas Shkalim, and in the spirit of Shabbos Mevarchim Chodesh Adar Sheni, and in the spirit of Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag, all good reasons to start getting serious about Purim. So, I collected a few ideas from the Chafetz Chaim on Purim, a couple of things I've seen over the years, one new thing that I found, and let's see what he has to say. Okay, the first piece is in Parshas Beshalach, and the Chafetz Chaim is comparing the miracle of Purim to all the other miracles. When we think about a miracle, when we think about, let's say, the Yad HaGdoyla that we saw when we left Mitzrayim, and the open miracles, so we feel in a very real way that that's a nes. Everyone knows the Chiddush of Purim is that it doesn't feel like much of a nes. It feels very natural. So how do you know it's a nes? What makes it a nes, and what's unique about the nes of Purim? So let's see, on page 1, on Parshas Beshach, in the second line. So he says, normally, again, when a person experiences a nes, so there's something that feels, right? He says in the first line, the very beginning of the piece, there's a half a line on the previous page, which is cut off. But he says, when we left Mitzrayim, we felt the miracle of Mitzrayim. When it comes to other nesim, maybe less so. Aval ha'emes hu. But the truth is, if we want to analyze any nes, we want to analyze any historical reality, which is kula nisim, right? We say every single time, we say modim. Hashem, the miracles that you do for us morning and afternoon and night, our whole life is a nes. Our whole life, right? That's how the Rav entered the famous machlokas Rambam and Ramban about whether or not there's a mitzvah tefillah on a daily basis. So the Ramban, based on the way the Chumash sounds like tefillah is only for a time of crisis, right? And the Rambam says that there's a daily obligation of tefillah. So Rav Soloveitchik said what? That if we realize that our life is constantly in crisis, even if it's not, right? Halavai, we shouldn't live always in a state of crisis. But if we realize the crisis, the existential crisis of just being a human being, the struggle of being a productive, good Jew from one day to the next, so there's what to daven about. There's always a struggle that we're engaged in, whether we fully realize it or not. Yeah? So, fine. So when it comes to miracles also, right? We kind of sometimes we see the end result, we see what it leads to, but we don't see the process along the way. So he says, let's analyze the process along the way when it comes to a Yom Tov like Purim, and what we would call the miracle of Purim. He says in the third line, since every step along the way, every occurrence is only a portion of the nes, therefore sometimes we don't see how the pieces fit together. Meaning if I take any one rung out of the ladder of this miracle, so it's not so impressive by itself. Purim is the greatest example of that. As he says, let's see, I don't want to spoil it. If I look at one piece of the puzzle, I don't see the whole picture. I don't see the Yad Hashem. I don't see the miracle. Our eyes might see and our ears might hear. We only get it when we get to the end. Right? You'll see my back, but you won't see my face. Sam Sofer is quoted in the Sefer Chut HaMeshulash as explaining, and many others explain as well, that you can only understand Hashem in reverse, looking back. Sometimes B'Shas Maisa, we miss the miracle that's taking place right before our eyes. And sometimes that which appeared super unmiraculous, seemed like a deepening of the struggle, in fact turns into the beginning of the salvation. Okay? So it's only when you get to the end that what? Mislachtos. Mislachtos means that unifies. That all of the chulios, all of the pieces snap together into a wholesome entity. And then the nes becomes illuminated, and we can see the miracle with all of its clarity and all of its brilliance. So he says, "Hinei lefaneinu lemashal nes Purim." So let's take for example the miracle of Purim. Thank you. Reishiso b'ma'ora she'ish lo sama lav leiv. Purim begins with an incident that not a single person would take note of. A seemingly minor detail. And yet it comes back in the end to be a critical component of the salvation. What's the thing that begins the whole story? And Mordechai, a Yehudi, who happens to speak 70 languages, overhears this incident, and he decides to save the king. Now, the Sfarim talk about, if you're Mordechai, do you want to save Achashverosh? Was that even a good thing that Mordechai, like, you know that Achashverosh is trouble, so why are you getting involved here? Why did you have to come to the rescue to save Achashverosh? But a sense of decency, Mordechai stepped up. He happened to speak 70 languages. He happened to overhear. He wanted to report to the king. So if I would just look at that incident by itself, I don't see Purim. I don't see the salvation of the Jewish people. I see a non-Jewish king who's probably a troublemaker and a source of difficulty for Klal Yisrael as being saved by a Jewish leader. So how is that good? When I look at that particular incident, independent from the rest of the Purim story, so I don't see any salvation, I don't see any miracle on behalf of the Jewish people. Now I go about halfway through the Megillah and the king has a rough night. So again, do I see a miracle? The king is having a sleepless night. He's got a lot on his mind, he's a melech. I don't see anything miraculous. A person can't sleep. I had a guy in my office today who was telling me about all of his sleep issues. I can't relate to it, Bechlal. I really can't. I really can't. I could literally fall asleep from like one word to the next if I wasn't. I don't know. I had a Baruch Hashem of sleep issues. When I was a kid one time, we came back from a family trip. My parents apparently took me out of the car and like stood me up against like the side of the car, and I was like sleeping, just like leaning on the car. So Baruch Hashem, I don't have trouble falling asleep. But people have real trouble. You could lie in bed for hours not falling asleep. So what's so strange? Okay, so but it's a normal occurrence. The king couldn't sleep, so. Sometimes a person can't sleep. A little indigestion. He's got a lot on his mind. It's a totally natural thing. But what happened? The king couldn't sleep. And what? He needed someone to read him a bedtime story. And it just so happened that of all the many volumes on the king's shelf, he pulled out the Sefer Zichronos that happened to tell the fact that Mordechai once upon a time did a big tova for the melech. And the king says, hey, wait a minute, was this person ever repaid for his kindness? The Nar HaMesharis answers Lafi Tumo in his innocence. He says, no, Shalom Nasalim Odavar. Did he realize what he was responding? Did he realize that he was putting into motion, right, the mamash, the turning point to the whole Megillah? So again, if I look at each piece of the miracle independently, I don't see any miracle. It's only when I string it all together, he says, that I start to see the miracle. Turn to the top of page 2. How do you know that a big miracle took place? When do you know a big miracle took place? When you string together all these events, and you say, what are the chances that all these things happen? And people talk about evolution, right? So, you know, even if like from one step to the next step, okay, something could happen. What are the chances that it happened, and it happened again, and it happened again, and it happened again, and it happened again, and it happened again? I mean, what are the chances that a person, you know, flips a coin, and it lands on heads? Okay, so it's, you know, just could lay heads, could be tails. He flips it again, and it lands on heads. He flips it again, and it lands on heads. He flips it again. So at some point, you start to wonder, something's happening here. Either this coin is fixed, or there's a heavenly force that's involved here. At some point, each thing, which independently is a natural occurrence, it just doesn't add up to something natural. So says the Rav Chaim, Masai Yadua Kol Kines Gadolka. So when did they realize that this is a miracle? You know when they realize? Kashenes Lachtu Kolam Oros Yach. When you tie together all the pieces and you unify all the steps, Azivinu Kulam Kianes Hischil Meis Shama Mordechai Is Divrei Bixam Veseresh. Then they were able to look back. Reisa Sacharai. They looked back and they said, wait a minute. From the moment Mordechai who happened to be a member of the Sanhedrin, who happened to speak 70 languages, happened to overhear Biksan Haseresh, and happened to go against what would have made sense to report to the king, and the king never rewarded him at the time, because he could have rewarded him and that would have been the end of it. And the king didn't reward him, and then later he's having a sleepless night, and he happens to pull out the sefer, and he happens to open to that page, and v'chulu, 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 v'chulu. And then a person says, whoa, this is the Yad Hashem. Now I realize that all along, from the first step, that was already a nes. They were all links in this large chain. Shanes Purim Shema. And that large chain, when it's all put together, is called Purim. Each step by itself would have been called just another day, another event. Typical moment in life. When you tie together all the pieces, what do you get? You get a totally different picture. You get a beautiful Yom Tov called Purim. And again, it's such an important yisod in life. You can look at little slices of your life independently and sometimes be very frustrated. You can see, not only is this Hashem not helping me, it's Hashem hurting me. And then you start to string together the big picture as it comes together, and you start to understand how it actually all makes a lot of sense, whether it's in this world or the next world. But eventually, you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a masterful plan, and every step forward and every step back was all accounted for. That there was a Hashkacha that was governing every step of the way. Yeah, you want to say something?
I think I heard this idea one time with in terms of the brachos that we say in the morning, Shesali Kol Tzarki.
Yeah.
So like it's interesting because we say like individual things that Hashem does for us, and then we say does everything for us. So what's he really talking? He's talking about the things that we don't realize is a miracle. It really is a miracle at the end.
Where'd you hear this?
Jake Biedemlansky.
Oh yeah? I feel like Rabbi Mansour said that part last year when he came and spoke.
Oh, maybe.
I feel like he also said that. Shalom. Welcome. Yeah, but that's a great part. That's the cold story. I mean, what about all those things that you're doing for me that I don't realize? That's what they say. When it says in Tehillim, right, that, you know, the halalukas that the goyim of the world are going to come and praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Halalu kol ovdei goyim. What's the lashon of the pasuk? Yeah, that the nations of the world are going to sing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What are they singing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu about? Things that we're not singing the praise? The answer is yes. Because how many times did they plot against us? And we don't even know that they plotted against us. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu behind the scenes saved us. And we're not even aware. We didn't realize that, you know, that someone was plotting to, God forbid, harm or kill a Jew that day. And, you know, and as he was, Rahman al-Islam, plotting to blow up a Jew, he blew himself up. And he never even got out of Gaza that morning. Baruch Hashem. So we don't even know. Right? We don't know about all the near misses and all those things that didn't come to fruition at all. So yeah, so the nations of the world are going to sing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that they know what they wanted to do to us, as the Chassam Sofer and others say. Okay, let's see, page 3. In the footnote on page 3, in the Maisa Lamelech, in Parshas Yisro, he explains the famous Gemara in Shabbos Peches. Right, we know that one of the beautiful sources of Simcha on Purim is the fact that the Jews reaccepted the Torah. The Kimu v'Kiblu, Kimu Masha Kiblu Kvar. So he says at the bottom of page 3, 3 lines from the bottom. Here's how the Chafetz Chaim would explain the Gemara in Shabbos Peches. Kimu v'kiblu, kimu masha kiblu kvar. Like Rashi writes over there in Shabbos Peches, me'ahavas hanes, the Jewish people were so in love with Hashem that they reaccepted the Torah with a great sense of what? Of desire. Kimu b'ratzon masha kiblu kvar ba'ones. On Purim they accepted willingly what Kafal Ayam Arkegigas had demanded of them by Kabbalah Satorah. So says the Chafetz Chaim, let's think about this. Mashma Shirak B'Yameyachash Re'erosh Kibla Yudim as the Torah B'Ritzon. So it sounds like what? That the Jews Dafka accepted the Torah willingly when? Dafka by Purim. B'Shah Shabah Har Sinai Kibla Satorah Me'onis. And in Har Sinai they accepted it what? By force. Kafal Ayam Arkegigas. It was coercion. So says the Chafetz Chaim, how does that make sense? How does that make any sense? It's the highlight of the week. How does that make any sense? Turn to page 4. V'tzorech lahavin. Eich efshar hadavar, shedor hamidbar dur deya, shahayu b'maymet ar sinai v'amru nasa v'nishma, sheheim akibas ator mitoch onas. How can you say that the dur deya, who said nasa v'nishma, using that opinion of the Rishonim that Nasim and Ishma came before, right, before they stood at that expression that appears in Parshat Mishpatim actually occurred before Kabbalah Satara. So how could it be that that generation that said Nasim and Ishma is considered forced into Kabbalah Satara? Okay, so let's chazer the famous answers to this question, because Tosfos on the side of the page in Masechta Shabbos addresses this question. Tosfos asks the question, what is Kafalei Marke Gigas if they said Nasim and Ishma? So what's Tosfos' answer? Why did Hashem have to force them if they said willingly we want the Torah? Some of us spoke about this before. What's the Tosfos' answer? That's the Medrash's answer. That's Medrash Tanchuma's answer. First Tosfos. Tosfos' answer on the side of the page is they thought they were signing up for Ribono Shel Olam, who's a cool guy, a chilled out religion. They showed up at the mountain, and Hashem is very intense. There's shofar, and there's fire, and there's cloud, and there's smoke, and there's the Dvar Hashem. And Tosfos says that every time Hashem speaks, Tosfos got this in the Gemara, but that's the point he's highlighting. That every time Hashem speaks, Yatzasa Nishimbasam, their souls are flying out of their bodies. So they said, Ribono Shel Olam, this is not, we didn't think you were going to be so intense. And they tried to quit at that point. And it was at that point Hashem said, you're not quitting, Kafalei Marki Gigas. So when they said Nasav and Ishma, according to Tosfos, they thought it was a more relaxed setting of religious life. Then they found out that God is very demanding. The Baal Bayis is dochek, like it says in Pirkei Avos. And they said, this is not for us. And Hashem says, too bad, you're stuck. Kafalei Marki Gigas, gun to your head, you're not going anywhere. Okay? That's Tosfos. What's the Medrash? So Yoni reminded us, the Medrash Tanchuma and Parshas Noach, it's an Os Gimel, I believe. The Medrash says they thought they were signing up for Torah Shebichsav. Turns out Torah Shebichsav came along with a very complicated and lengthy and detailed Torah Shebaal Peh. And it was at that point they said it was one thing to take the Chumash, it's another thing to take a set of Shas. So they said, thanks but no thanks. We're not interested in signing up for Shas. And it was at that point, Kafalei Marke Gigas. Okay? What is the Baal Shem Tov? What's the Baal Shem Tov's answer to Kafalei Marke Gigas? Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh gave a famous answer that Hashem was saying to the Jews, it's great that this Vart Dafka comes from the Baal Shem Tov of all people. Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh said, Hey Nachanami, Hashem's saying to the Jews, it's very sweet that you're all inspired right now, Nasa Vinishma, and you feel like, you know, I'll do anything for you, God, I don't even need to know what's in the Torah. But guess what? Hashem says, it's not always going to feel... It's not always going to feel like the Malava Malka, the last night of Shana Aleph. It's not always going to feel that way. Yeah? Not the week of midterms. So how are you going to get to davening that week? The answer is, Kafalei Marke Gigas. You're going to put a gun to your head and you're going to say, get out of bed, you bum. Yeah? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Hiktim Refuah Lamaka. Hashem says, right now, Nasav Nishma, you're all very inspired. Hashem said, that's beautiful. Halavai should continue forever. But guess what? There's going to be Kafalei Marke Gigas mornings also. Those dark, rainy days where you're not feeling it so much. And you have to force yourself to come to the Beis Medrash. So the Baal Shem Tov would be very happy if we stayed on the Nasav Nishma level. But it was a reality that Hashem was preparing us for, that sometimes it's going to hurt to be a Jew, and you're going to have to force yourself. Okay? That's the Baal Shem Tov's specific answer that's brought Mishnah the Baal Shem Tov. What's Chassidus' general answer to this question? Yeah, we learned a couple Sundays ago, right? That the Kafalei Marke Gigas was what? The coercion came about in what form? Such open revelation. That the coercion was, how could you turn down Hashem when what? When Hashem is talking to you. So the bittul of Bechira that took place at Har Sinai was in the form of such open revelation. It wasn't God forcing them into something that they didn't want. But in a certain sense, they were forced to choose Hashem because, how could you not? When Hashem is revealing Himself like never before in world history, how could you not choose Hashem? Okay? So different approaches to exactly what was the necessity for the Ones and what was the Ones. But Chofetz Chaim says, Kedargo B'Kodesh, Kipshuto, just take a step back. This is the greatest generation. They said Nasav and Ishma. Why was Hashem forcing them into it? And what happened on Purim that all of a sudden we fell in love with the Torah that we wanted to accept it willingly? So says the Chafetz Chaim, Aval Be'emes. Everyone see where we are on page 4 in the third line? We have one more copy if you're interested. Rebbe Tesla, we want you to feel welcome. You can move up if you want. I don't know if you, how long you can stay, but you're welcome to make yourself comfortable. On page 4 in the third line in the footnote. But in truth, the Jews did not hesitate to accept the Torah. Adrava. Chamdua v'kiblua b'lo shum tenayim. They said, Nasa v'nishma, ain't a chanami. No. So what changed? What was the... So what changed on Purim that made Purim's Kabbalah so much more significant? El b'ra'osam kol ha'kashim sh'yisblu mishmira samitzos v'galas ha'rucha. Chashu sh'min ha'nimna yelahem la'sheves v'ein ha'umos. V'lo le'achol mi'pitam. V'lo l'shtos mi'yenam. But the Jews said, the Torah sounds great, but Hashem, let's think about this. Right now, here at the mountain, living in your presence, yeah, it's great. But is the Torah realistic when we're going to go into Galus, and we're going to be in all sorts of lands, and it's going to be hard to get kosher bread, and it's going to be hard to get kosher wine, and it's going to be hard to find a nice Jewish girl to marry? How is it shayich, l'sheves v'eino umos, and not to eat their bread, and not to drink their wine, and not to marry their daughters, and not to mingle with them? Halo kol ze yigrom l'sino nora, they're going to hate us for it. If we don't mix in, so if it's going to stay like this, Hashem, so then find them. Of course we're excited to be mekabel the Torah. We're just not sure how this is a long-term plan. The Chassan Sofer, the Chatan Sofer, was the grandson of the Chassam Sofer. Chatan Sofer, remember, I was so excited, I'll never forget this, because I was so excited when I first found out why the Chatan Sofer is called Chatan Sofer. You know why he called the Sefer Chatan Sofer? I can't not say it every time I mention him. The Chatan, he wrote for his wedding, good guess. Chatan stands for Chidushei Torah Neched Sofer. Chatan, Chidushei Torah Neched Sofer. The novel Torah insights of the Necher, of the grandson of Sofer. Who's Sofer? Chassam Sofer, the famous Sofer, Moshe Sofer. So this was the grandson, so he called it Chatan Sofer. Chidushei Torah Neched Sofer. The grandson of the famous Sofer, which is Rav Moshe Schreiber, Rav Moshe Sofer, Chassam Sofer. So he says an amazing thing. He talks about this whole Kafalei Marki Gistos was his question, the Medrash Tanchuma's question. And he said, that's really, he learns it like the Chavetz Chaim. It's in his writings by Shavuos. He learns like the Chavetz Chaim that what they were saying is, we don't know how this is going to work in Galus. Right? That's why when a Kodesh Baruch Hu forced them to accept the Torah, Hashem said, take the Torah or else what? Everyone remember the Lashon of the Gemara? In Mekavlin is the Torah Muta. V'im Lav, and if not, Shom Te'ekvuraschem. So my father always likes to ask the question, because my father's the type of person who likes to ask these types of questions, right? What do you mean, Shom teik furasvim? There you shall be buried? Where's there? Here you shall be buried. Right? Po, right here. What do you mean, there you shall be buried? So the difference farm answered that question. I first heard the question from my father, and I said, did anyone ask that question? But yes, farm asked that question. It's a good question. Shom teik furasvim, there you're going to be? Where's there? So the Chassan Sofer says, you know where there is? The Jews are saying, in Galus, if we try to be from, it's going to ruin us. Hashem says, no, 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 if you don't have the Torah there, then you're going to be destroyed. With Torah is the only chance you're going to survive in Galus. You think Torah is going to make it harder to survive in Galus? Torah is going to give you the one thing that allows you to survive in Galus. So the Jews stood at the mountain, says the Chavetz Chaim, and they said, what? What's going to be? They're going to hate us. The nations of the world aren't going to... We don't eat your bread. We don't drink your wine. One of the things that Haman said to Achashverosh is what? You remember? With the wine? If a fly fell into the wine, they would take it out and they would drink the wine. If you touch their wine, that's it. Pour it down the drain. So you're lower than a fly. V'halom gezeras Haman ba b'shvil sh'mordechai shamar b'shpitei HaTorah v'lo ratz l'shachos l'Haman. Yeah, Shanas the Salam Alipo. So they were saying, what's going to be? It's going to destroy us. So listen to what happened. You know what they learned on Purim? They learned Vinahafachu. They learned that when a Jew keeps Torah in Galus, not only does it not destroy you, but Mordechai's refusal to bow, which superficially looked like the thing that was going to destroy Klal Yisrael, that irked Haman to such a degree that he was prepared to destroy not just Mordechai, but Am Mordechai, the entire nation of Mordechai. In the end, it was Mordechai's rock solid commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that saves Klal Yisrael. Look what he writes in the next paragraph. Purim comes along and the whole plate gets overturned on its face. Purim taught Jews, if you think you're messing yourself over by being a religious person, the opposite. By running away from Torah, you're asking for the hatred of the nations of the world. By trying to fit in, you're asking for the hatred of the world. By being an authentic, proud Jew who believes in the Torah wholeheartedly, the nations of the world will have a tremendous respect for you. It's the first piece in Likutei Moran. Right? The chain of Klal Yisrael comes from Jews who are serious. And it's when Torah is not being treated seriously, when we don't take ourselves seriously, that's when they hate us. When a person says to his boss, I have to leave early because I keep Shabbos, as long as he does that consistently, most people of the world will be very respectful of that. And will appreciate the fact that, you know what, you're a person of principle. That's why I want to hire you. But the second that same person decides, you know what, I'm going to cut corners on time to seal a big deal, and I run into Chilul Shabbos, so you think, this is the greatest commitment I ever made for the company. That's the moment the boss starts to hate you. Because he sees that you're a phony. All these times you left early because you claimed that you couldn't, it was an unbreakable thing, and now I see you're compromising. So on Purim, the Ka'ara was turned on its face. The whole perspective was flipped over, is what he's saying. Hasar, Agadol Medinas Achashverosh Nitla. Right? The most powerful person in Achashverosh's kingdom, the one who seemed to be totally in control, lost complete control, and Haman was what? Nitla. Haman was hanged. Rak etmol hufgar dam Yehudim, v'hayom sasun v'simcha la Yehudim ha'osim shvatim begayim. Yesterday the Jews' lives were hanging in the balance, and today it's the greatest celebration of all. They saw in the clearest of ways. They learned that a Jew does not have to be ashamed. And a Jew does not have to think it's an impossibility to be living in a secular society and being a wholehearted, complete Jew. The people were so mad at Mordechai. They really thought Mordechai was the one who was going to kill them. His rock solid commitment to Judaism was ruining them. And the answer was just the opposite. His rock solid commitment was what saved every single one of them. All those doubts about, do I lose when I keep halacha? The answer is no. A resounding no. That their hearts told them, right? That they questioned, that they weren't sure. Mount Har Sinai, can this plan work? It works at Mount Sinai, but does it work in the 1800s in Germany? Does it work in 2016 in America? The answer is yes, it does. Nochachu ledas she'efshar lishmor haTorah gam biyosim be'aretz oyveihem. V'lachein hader kivlu b'mei Achashverosh, and that suffix was resolved on Purim. That slight suffix, again, Chafetz Chaim says, of course it was Nasev and Ishva. Of course they were the Dor Deah. But that slight suffix, that little hesitation, can the Torah, is it a Torah's MS? Is it Nitzchi? Can it last in any place, in any time? And the answer is yes. And that's dafka why it was given in the Midbar. The Medrash says, why wasn't the Torah given in Eretz Yisrael? Why was it given in the Midbar to show that you could be in a Midbar? You could be in a... Right now this happens to be a very holy Midbar. But the general idea of Midbar, of a wasteland, being a place of Kabbalah Satorah, is dafka the point that Hashem was trying to make. And on Purim, they felt that. They didn't just know it as an abstract idea. They saw it with their own eyes. Yes?
Do they say it's dangerous to ask this question? Or,
what do you mean dangerous to ask this question?
I mean, are they saying don't ever ask if can the Torah really be here?
Well, they did. They at Har Sinai, they asked that question. But on Purim, the Kimu V'Kimlu of Har Sinai, the Kimu V'Kimlu of Purim, sorry, was the resolution of that question. Was the greatest proof that the Jews committed when it seems like the commitment is ruining you, is dafka saving you.
It seems like they didn't ask the question and God said, it's good for Jews to ask questions. He said, okay, I'm holding a mountain over your head.
Okay, because it wasn't ready to resolve the question, I guess, with, you know, they had to just know that these are the facts. But they carried it around with like this, they still had a suffix in their heart. They were forced into accepting the Torah. Hashem said, yes, it's going to work in Galilee. They said, how? We don't understand how. Purim, they felt the answer to that question. B'chush, that's what Chavos said. B'chush, they felt that B'li Safek, a Jew will never lose by keeping Torah mitzvos. You never lose out. It's always advantageous for you not to compromise on Torah mitzvos. Okay, let's turn to page 5.
This is after.
That's correct.
After.
That Kimu v'Kiblu is the end. It's Megillah Perek Tes. That Kimu v'Kiblu. At the end of the story, they were Makabel. They were Makayim. That was they were Makabel originally. And Kimu Masha Kiblu Kvar. Now they really were Makayim then, wholeheartedly. Okay, the Sefer Shalmei Todah. Sefer Shalmei Todah is a contemporary Sefer. I bought it when I was in YU from the YU Sfarim Cell. I walked into the Sfarim Cell, which this year I did not do even once, believe it or not.
Why not?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But I didn't go this year. But I walked in when I was a student in YU, I walked into the Sfarim Cell, and I saw this Sefer Shalmei Todah on Purim, in Yoni Purim. So I picked it up, I started flipping through, it looked very nice, a lot of nice inyan, mostly halacha, but it had a beautiful psicha, a lengthy psicha, with beautiful insights, several from the Chafetz Chaim, several from the Gra, and I looked at the back of the Sefer, and the price tag said $3.11. I said, $3.11? That's cheap, for like a nice new, so I bought it. And then a couple days later, I was like, there's no way that book was $3.11. So I went back and I said, like, is it possible that this was not marked correctly? So they checked and it was not marked correctly, but they still said, you know, you were zeicha to acquire it and you can have it for $3. So I have a very good, I have good feelings for the Sefer Shalmei Todah. It was a lucky quote. Acquisition.
Would you have bought it?
I don't know. I don't know if I would have bought it if it was $23 or even if it was $13.
But
for $3, how could you not take a nice... I think the Sefer had just come out around that time. He has other volumes also. He has one on Sukkos. My brother has the Sukkos one. Okay, so look what he says here. He brings B'Shem the Chavetz Chaim at the bottom of page 5. It was Dalet. U'mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachava. Yeah. It's a hemshech of the Var we were just learning. It fits perfectly with what we were just learning. He quotes here, he says, the Chavetz Chaim, Kosev HaChavetz Chaim Zatzal. Now this is printed where? B'sefer Musar Haskel B'sofo B'ma'amare Avas Hashem Sof Perek Beis. Okay, so I didn't have access to that sefer. So here's what the Chavetz Chaim says. V'gam imayisad de Mordechai she'ischazek shelo l'shtachavos l'haman v'pnei she'osa atzmo Eloa. When Haman decided to make himself into a god, and Mordechai refused to bow down to him, Kmo Shamru Chazal, Haf Shahayal Pia Tevasakon Gedola Avorze, even though superficially Mordechai was putting the Jews in the greatest danger of all, Yesh Lilmor Mizeh Hilchasar Rabasi. We learn from here a very critical halacha. Shafilo Imhu Roeh. Turn the page. That even if a person sees Shal Yedei Zeh Shalo Yishtach Velavodazara, even if you think my failure to submit before an Avodah Zarah is what is going to put lives in danger, a Jew has to know that sometimes I gotta just do what's right. And it's not for me to make the cheshbon how it's gonna work out. He shouldn't pay attention to this, and he should not distance himself from the principles of the Torah, the facts of the facts. Shrei Mordechai Yedeshalo Karvel Yishtachave, Yatzah Katzef Haman Al Kol Klal Yisrael. The anger of Haman was dafka, inflared. Is that a word? Inflared? Inflamed? Enraged? Yeah? Was... Yeah, because Mordechai refused to bow down. And there was a tremendous sakana for Klal Yisrael. Mordechai didn't care. Not only that, you know the Kedushas Levi? If you don't know this Berditcher, you have to know this Berditcher. You know what the Kedushas Levi says on Mordechai lo yichra v'leishtachava? It's such a strange series of psukkim. I think it's in the third parak. It says that what? Mordechai won't bow down. And they come to Haman and they say to Haman, they come to tell Haman that what? That Mordechai won't bow down because he's a Jew. So says the Kedushas Levi, oh, because Haman didn't know Mordechai was a Jew? He couldn't tell with his payas, his gartel, and his, you know, long white beard. He couldn't tell that Mordechai was a Jew. He was a leader of the Jewish people. He couldn't tell. They came to Haman and they said, right, that Mordechai Shahi Gidlo Shahu Yehudi. He didn't know that. He asked a series of other questions as well. It's very shvira, the psukim over there. So you know what he says the answer is? He says, no. Mordechai, he has an amazing mahalach. When the pasuk says about Mordechai, and it introduces Haman and Mordechai. I have a glass right here. Why am I making it difficult for myself? Happen to have a Tanakh here tonight. Look, listen to this pasuk. It says, the pasuk says, who was Mordechai? Mordechai is a chashuv person. Yeah? He sat b'shar ha-melech. The pasuk says, listen, here's what it says. V'chol avdei ha-melech asher b'shar ha-melech kor v'shtachim loham. Ki kein tziv alo ha-melech. Yeah? Everyone bowed down because that was the king's decree that everyone should bow to Haman. U'mordechai lo yichirav alo yishtachaveh. It says, the Berditchever, that's also part of the king's decree. Mordechai had a special exemption because of his chashuv status as a nobleman, as an honorable person in Achashverosh's kingdom. That Mordechai was not expected to bow down. Ready for this? However, if this doesn't make you feel like you're like the best Jew in the world, then I don't know what else I can possibly offer you. V'yomer avdei ha-melech asher b'shalem melech l'mordechai. Madu ata over al mitzvas ha-melech? Mordechai, why aren't you bowing down? So what's the answer? The king said, I don't have to. Yeah? V'hi ka'amra me'lav yom yom v'lo shamaleyem. They kept talking Mordechai about this inyan, and he kept giving it the following answer. V'yagidu lahaman, that what? Liros hayam du divrei Mordechai, ki higid lam asher hu Yehudi. Mordechai was telling them what? You know why I'm not bowing down to Haman? Not because the king gave me an exemption, because even if the king didn't give me an exemption, I still wouldn't bow down to Haman. You know why? Because I'm a Jew, and a Jew does what's right. So go tell Haman, in case he's patting himself on the back, that all the Jews are bowing, and Mordechai doesn't have to bow, because the king said he doesn't have to. You should just know, V'yar Haman, and Haman saw, ki ein Mordechai korei mishdachav elo. Haman saw what? V'yimalei Haman chema. Why was Haman so angry? Mordechai had a heter. Achashverosh gave him the heter. Ki kein tziv elo ha-melech. Mordechai lo yichrav elo yishdachav elo. No, Mordechai said, Haman, in your face. Even if the king said I have to bow down to you, just know the real reason I'm not bowing down to you is not because Asher Tzivalo Melech Achashverosh, Asher Tzivalo Melech Malachim Lachem Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Ki higid lahem Asher Hu Yehudi, because I'm a Jew. No. So now does Klal Yisrael have a right to be angry at Mordechai? Mordechai, just be quiet. You could. Why not just rely? You have a head. You don't have to get him angry on purpose. But Mordechai says, a Jew cannot be embarrassed of being Shomer Torah and Mitzvahs. And a Jew doesn't have to feel ashamed of the fact that he's doing the right thing. And therefore, yes, I want people to know that you think I'm putting your life in danger, and you think I'm getting Haman angry at Klal Yisrael, but guess what? My commitment to Yiddishkeit is going to save every last one of you. Says the Chafetz Chaim in the second paragraph on page 6. Urei achi, my dear brother, listen, says the Chafetz Chaim. As Kedushas Torah say, look at the holiness of our Torah. Ki bavade b'shosh yotza ketzef lahashvid lahargis kol ha-yehudim. Hayukama anashim ra'anim acharei Mordechai. People were saying to Mordechai, look what you caused. Ayidei tzar gazu, this is all your fault. V'hu bavade heishiv lahem shechein nachon lasas api ha-Torah. Mordechai says, I'm doing what the Torah says a Jew should do. Which is what? You don't bow down to a varazar. You don't bow down to a varazar, period. So they're saying, look, it's the Torah's fault. Look, aval re'ei achi, says the Chavetz Chaim. Listen, my brother, pay attention. Ma also levesov mizeh. What came from this? Shechalila lo haya al yedei zeh shum hezek. Lo v'lo l'klal Yisrael. Neither Mordechai nor the Jewish people were harmed by this. In fact, vina hafachu adraba ha'isachu gedola al yedei zeh shenerag haman v'chol banav. You start up with the Jews, a Jew keeps Torah mitzvos, the greatest kalach in the world. 75,000 Amalekim died in the battle, v'chulu, v'chulu, v'chulu. Says the Chavetz Chaim, what do we learn from this? A Jew has to know that end of the day, if I keep halacha, nothing bad's going to come. And that, again, he emphasizes here, is the hadar kiblua bimei Achashverosh, the realization, the absolute realization, that when I keep Torah and mitzvos, no harm can befall a person. Rak chayim v'tov adkan. Adkan, the words of the Chavetz Chaim. Okay? Page 7. Page 7. Take a second to catch your breath. Right under that spot, so you're not supposed to sit on top of it. But people don't realize that. It's like literally sitting on the aron.
Where?
That middle. That middle. That middle one.
Should be
like a sign or something.
I think there used to be a sign.
In memory of.
They used to keep that big box of kids' toys there for the kids on Shabbat. That's like Bechinas the crew of him, you know. kids' toys on top of the aron. This is Bechinas the crew of him on top of the aron.
That's correct.
What about the room above?
But what did you say?
What about the next room?
Right, the next room up. I don't know. The poskim, the Achronim talk in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses about living on top of. If you live on top of a shul, and like you know. Should my bed be positioned like right on top of the Sefer Torah? The answer is probably not. Probably not. Okay. Page 7. Now this is from the biography of the Chofetz Chaim. There's a three volume biography. The English article biography of the Chofetz Chaim is based on this biography. It's a three volume biography called the Chofetz Chaim Chayav U'Po'olo. I think that's the name of it. And there's a few permit insights that appear in the third volume. Okay? So we'll end with just three final ideas. Okay? We'll do it in the next 10 minutes. Page 7. Purim ba'avar uva'asir. We know the Medrash says that Purim is not going to be batal asir lavo. As opposed to the other holidays, which are going to be batal asir lavo. The Rambam writes that Kisvei HaKodesh are going to be batal asir lavo. The only books of the 24 books of Tanakh that are going to continue to have value in the times of Mashiach are the 5 books of Moses and Megillas Esther. So Purim has this nitzchi quality, this eternal quality, that when everything else is batal, somehow Purim goes on. It's a very hard thing to understand, which is exactly what the Chofetz Chaim wants to understand, right? This Medrash and Mishnah that says Kol ha-mo'adim asidim lios betelim v'yamei ha-purim einim betelim ve'olam. Just to give you a good Mari Makom, the Tshuva Sarashva and Simon Sadi Gimel talks about this. But it's something that people are trying to figure out. What's with Purim? And what does it even mean the other Yom Tov are going to be batal? And the other Svarim are going to be batal? Exactly. So he's focusing on, again, the Mo'adim, right? The holidays being batal. Says the Chofetz Chaim, Maim Rezek Kosha Lavino. How do you understand the Pasha Pshat in this? Hayitachin Shekol Mo'adim HaChashuvim Pesach Shuvah Sukkis. That's it. Batal. Purim, he says, of all things, makes it into the Yemos HaMashiach. V'davka Purim sha'olam ragil lomar lav she'enenu chag klal davka hu yishaer. Purim somehow survives and nothing else makes it. And Purim, which some people don't even consider a Yom Tov. Purim's just a fun day. You know, it's the Rabban. That's what lasts. So look what he says. V'sha'anu ma'avir ma'abata kol ha'gezeros shnik zhu'al yisrael b'tekuvas galuso. We were tachazer over every gezerah that ever existed on the Jewish people. There was never a gezerah in the history of our lengthy galus as threatening as what? As the gezerah of Haman. Shegezerasa shel Haman haisa kasha shebekulan. The most difficult gezerah ever. Haman bikesh lahashmid laharag la'abid is kol ha'yehudim. He's the Tzor HaYehudim. He's the worst of the worst. Mibli l'seis lahem afilas habreira shel shmad. The Chofetz Chaim understands Kipshuto, which is the way I understood until about 3 weeks ago, that what? You aren't allowed to quit. Let's say a Jew decides I want to convert out to save my life. Could you?
No.
Right? So the Pasha says, no. Haman's plot was to any person who had Jewish blood, that was it. That was the end of you. There was no escaping by abandoning one's faith. Okay, but we saw a couple of Sundays ago that in the Maimer of Atta Tetzaveh, the last edited Maimer from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he quoted from the Baal Tanya that if a Jew would have abandoned his faith, then he actually could have saved himself, which I thought was a huge chiddush. Never saw that anywhere. that you could, and but they didn't even entertain it. That was the chashivas of Klal Yisrael's commitment at that time. But the pashas, I would think, is more like the Chavetz Chaim, that Haman was not negotiating. You couldn't reject your Judaism. You couldn't abandon your Judaism. Who bikesh lahashmid is kol ehudim lelo yotzim in a klal. Period. Lelo shum tanai, without any conditions to be met. And therefore, what? Lefi chazal amnam hayu ayehudim reuyim laonish zeh. The plan could have been carried out and executed. If not for that last minute tshuva effort, that would have been the end of Klal Yisrael. So what does it mean that Purim lasts forever? Look what he says. The last paragraph. Every Yom Tov has its miracle. The miracle of Purim overshadows all of the miracles. Why? Yan ki b'neze nitzu ayude michilion charutz. Because the Jewish people were on the verge of complete destruction, and they emerged intact. Baram ein b'mashmaos ha'dvarim shekol ha'adam yibatu mamish. Says the Chavetz Chaim, the Medrash is not saying that what? The Medrash is not saying that the Yom Tov are going to be batel. It just means that the miracles that we're going to experience, k'tzeis chon l'aretz Yitzrayim erenu niflos, so too, in the end of days, the miracles that we're going to see are going to be so awesome, so mind-blowing, that the miracles of old are going to be completely overshadowed. That the miracles we saw by Yitzchak Mitzrayim are going to look childish compared to what we have yet to see. And the miracle of our survival in the wilderness, when we were sitting in our sukkos, either sukkos mamish or ananei kavod, which were both miraculous, that whole miraculous sukkah was going to seem again childish compared to what's going to come. What's the one Yom Tov? What's the one miracle that even today is so significant that no matter what's going to happen in the future, it's still going to be? It's not going to be. It's not going to be batel in the sense. It's not going to be overshadowed at all. The answer is Purim. Now, I'm not 100% sure how to read this piece. Let me tell you what I mean by that. Look at the last two lines. Look what he says. Kach yitfos neis Purim tamid makom berosh bein anisim agedolim shel am Yisrael hein ba'avar vein ba'asir. That the miracle of Purim is so super significant that it's the best miracle now and it'll still be the best in the future. The question is, what does he mean? What was so great about Purim? It was all within Teva. So I'm not sure the Chavetz Chaim is saying that because it was a totally different type of miracle, it can't be batel. Here, meaning the fireworks and the fancy stuff, the open miracles, the godly revelation, the makos, right? Those were spectacular sights, but they can be overshadowed by even more spectacular open miracles. Purim's on a different playing field.
It already looks like nothing.
Right, it already looks like, exactly. So the celebration of Purim already operates differently. Maybe that's what he's saying. Okay? The other way to learn it is that he's focusing on, the miracle in the sense of what? That we were nearly destroyed, and we were totally not destroyed. That unbelievable salvation cannot be overshadowed by anything. It's very Mashiach-dick. It's Klal Yisrael on the verge of destruction. We sometimes feel that way, in Ruchnias at least. In the Ikkas of the Mashiach, we're holding on for dear life. And then there's a Vina Hafachu, we come to the Gula Shlema. So that's very Purim-dick. Purim was a physical near destruction, and then everyone survived. So now we all seem like we're all about to be spiritually destroyed, and yet we're all going to survive. And we're going to bring the Gula. So maybe that's what it means, that Purim can't be overshadowed and made batel. Yeah?
So because Purim was within nature?
Right, so maybe that's what I first thought he was saying, that because Purim operates within nature, right, because the appreciation of Purim, the appreciation of the miracle of Purim, is not because we were wowed by the lights and the sounds of Yetzias Mitzrayim. The lights and sounds of Yetzias Mitzrayim can be overpowered and overshadowed by an even more exciting lights and sound show. But Purim, which is much more, it's a subtle type of miracle, it took place within Teva, I'm not gonna trade in a Purim just because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is gonna do really exciting tricks when he brings the Gula Shlem. Yeah.
Maybe we're always gonna need to look at Purim because we'll always have to look back and say, really, even though I don't think anything's happening, it really is happening.
Okay. I hear. Right, the Purim becomes the Purim teaches us how to
view of the world.
Had a view of a very different type of something that's happening when it almost looks like nothing's happening. Nice.
It's like what Rebbe said at the beginning, that when you look at an independent event.
Right, exactly. That limud of Purim to string Purim together the events.
Is that time right. to recognize that?
Right. And that perspective that comes from Purim is necessary even in the times of Gula. Yeah. Okay, page 8. Also, again, from that Hebrew biography of the Chafetz Chaim, a very novel pshat. This was the newest thing I found for this year. Very novel pshat in explaining what? That a person should drink wine on Purim until he doesn't know the difference between... I'm drunk, apparently. It's been a long day. Between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Right? A person's supposed to drink wine, Shitas Rava, Megillah Zion Amud Beis. What do they do before Rava? It's an interesting question, maybe for a Purim share. That's why I'm talking about it. No, seriously, Rava was Mechadesh to drink wine on Purim? No one drank wine on Purim before Rava came along? It's a general Shas question when someone says something. What happened? Like, the Yerushalmi has in Brachos. I was so excited when I saw this Rishami, because I was always bothered by this question. Like, what did they do last week, right? That's the way you ask the question. So they're having a machlokas, where do you insert Havdalah into Shmona Esrei and Motzei Shabbos, Shmona Esrei? Where do you insert, right? Atachan Antanu, machlokas Tanayim. So like, Chevra, what did you guys do last week before you had this machlokas? Right, so Yishalmi asked that question. Yishalmi in Brachos. I was so excited when I found this. Yishalmi in Brachos. Chevra, what did you do last week? Right, how about Rashi Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin? So like, what were Jews doing before Rashi Rabbeinu Tam came along and had that machlokas? Like, what was everyone else wearing? Why do we call it Rashi Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin? Okay, there's an interesting Rav Nachum Kasher, the author of the Torah Shlema, that encyclopedia of Midrashim, has an interesting essay on this.
What did the Yishalmi say?
I don't remember.
Sunday shit.
Mm-hmm. I was just so happy that they asked that question. I totally forget what the Yerushalmi says. I don't know, we can look it up. We can track it down. You can go to my office sometimes. I happen to have the first volume of the Yerushalmi in my office. So I think I should have it marked. What'd you say?
So it's not on your computer?
It's probably somewhere in one of the files, I don't know where. Okay, so what do you mean, Adlo Yada Bain Aror Haman LeBaruch Mordechai? Why are you staring at me? I'm not speaking slowly on purpose. Between Aror Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Yeah, you have to get it right at least now, so that way on Purim you can. So look what he says. He says, you know what Aror Haman and Baruch Mordechai is? The miracle. There's two things to be so excited about on Purim. A Jew could be endlessly filled with simcha because of Aror Haman. There's such a geschmack we get out of the downfall of Haman. But there's also a tremendous pride. Yeah? Yerosim Yachad Tcheles Mordechai. We see the greatness of... We're filled with endless joy watching a Malik be crushed. And we're filled with endless joy watching the Jewish people be elevated. So which is the Iker Simcha of Purim? And the answer is both. Says the Rav Tzchaim. We'll just jump straight to the second paragraph. Simchas Purim hi simcha kfula. Michad gisa ha simcha ha mispataz ba'ar haman hainu ma'palasa shal haman v'ana kama shenasa ba'u v'chol oive ha'yehudim. On the one hand, we're filled with endless joy seeing the downfall of Haman and the enemies of the Jewish people. Umeidach, but on the other hand, the simcha is what? In the form of Baruch Mordechai. Asher gidlo ha'melech ve'ikimu lo la'mishneh. All these good things happen for the Jews. And therefore, when we celebrate the miracles of Purim, the Simcha of Purim, says Rava, should be so lebedik and should be so simchadik, adalo yada bein Aror Haman lebaruch Mordechai. Listen to what it means. It's not that you get drunk to the point that you can't speak straight. Anu nidrashim levli lahafsik af lerega biyom haPurim as achedva hashevach vahodaya, that a Jew should be constantly, fully filled with joy and praise and thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu ad kedei tishtush hatchumim, Until what? Until there's a blurring of the boundaries. What does that mean? Hakadesh nagil amatzav shelo neid la'avchin mit shnei suge achesed shegamol imanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'osam anisim. I don't know which one I'm more excited about, exactly. I'm so... Wow, Baruch Mordechai, Ba'ar Haman! Baruch Mordechai, Ba'ar Haman! To the point that it's just... That I can't even be mavchin between one and the other. I'm just exploding with these feelings of joy. In the footnote, he says a beautiful thing. He says, you know, there's also two types of Jews in the world. There's Jews who are Baruch Mordechai types of Jews, who take tremendous pride in the successes of the Jewish people. But then there's irreligious Jews, whose whole connection to Judaism is what? Is Hitler's trying to kill me, so Ar Haman. And the Chafetz Chaim says, I'm pretty much supposed to be awaken a feeling of Achva and Achdus, yeah, amongst Klal Yisrael, to the point that what? That there's no difference, that the Jew who loves the success of the Jews, and the Jew who only feels Jewish when Ar Haman, when he's cursing under his breath at the enemies of the Jewish people who are trying to harm him, to the point that they both feel that they're working together. That's part of the achdus that's created on through the simcha, that awesome level of simcha that's only achieved by the yom tov, the yom tov that will never be battled, the yom tov of Purim. Okay? We have time for one last part. Okay, page 9 and 10. And this was the first of all the Purim of art lach I showed you tonight. This was the first one in my personal life that I had ever seen. And I was very, very excited. I remember I was in YU when I found this var, and I was very excited about it, because it's a very different type of Chafetz Chaim var, very different, very creative. It's not so much Al Derech Avod, they're going to teach us anything, although there is an important takeaway message, but it just shows the Chafetz Chaim sensitivity to a Maimer Chazal, and to reading it in a very clever way. Okay? For the sake of time, I'll tell it to you just more or less outside, we'll read just a little inside. It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Ma'amar Sechta. The Gemara says, in the book of Isaiah, in Yeshaya Perek Lamites, it says, I'll just read you in English for the sake of time. At that time, Merodach Baladan, son of Baladan, the king of Babylonia, sent letters and a gift to Hezekiah. And Hezekiah HaMelech received a gift and a letter, because who? Because Merodach Baladan heard that Hezekiah was sick. So he sent him a care package. He heard that he was ill and had recuperated. So he sent him, he said, well, you know, that's good news. He sent him a fuel well card and a box of whatever, chocolates. Yeah? Okay? So listen. So the Gemara tells the following story. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Nebuchadnezzar, his humble beginnings were actually as what? Were as a sofer, as a scribe for this Beladan. And what happened was, when he sent the letter that's being described here, he wrote in the letter, remember what he wrote in the letter? He sent the letter to Chizkiah. What did he write in the letter? He said in the letter, Shalma Malka Chizkiah, Shalom Aleichem King Chizkiah, Shalom on the city of Jerusalem, and Shalom on your great God. The letter was sent. Nebuchadnezzar was on a lunch break. Yeah? Nebuchadnezzar comes back from his lunch break and he hears that the letter has been sent. He said, what was written in the letter? I'm the head scribe. So they say to him, well, we wrote in the letter, Shalom Aleichem Chizkiyahu, Shalom Aleichem Jerusalem, Shalom Aleichem the Jewish God. So he says, how do you put their God last? Who puts God last in the letter? So Nebuchadnezzar started running to catch the messenger who was delivering the letter. The Gemara says exactly, the Gemara says that what? That he took three steps. Yeah? And then the Malach Gavriel came and he scooped him up. So he shouldn't be able to run. Because every step he was taking on behalf of who? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Malach Gavriel came and scooped him up and what? Saved Klal Yisrael, it says. That had Nebuchadnezzar run all the way, it would have been the end of the Jewish people. Adkan the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Right? Now that's the Gemara. Take it back. That's the version of the Gemara as presented in the Medrash, in the Alter. The Gemara, he says, take a look right after the big paragraph. The Gemara Girsa Arba Psios, and in the Medrash and in the Yalkut and the Tanchuma, the Girsa is three steps. So did he take four steps or did he take three steps? And why Davka Gavriel? And how does this save Klal Yisrael? So the Chavetz Chaim once gave a drasha and he said an amazing thing. He says two paragraphs from the end of page 9. Be'emes lo ratz oz Nebuchadnezzar ela shalosh pesios. He ran three steps, and he began to take a fourth step, and Gavriel came and scooped him up. So the Chavetz Chaim resolves the girsos. Three steps are four steps. You know what the Chavetz Chaim says? 3.5 steps. How do you know this part? You know this part?
I think you told it to
me. I told it to you? Really? When?
In high school?
Wow.
I really remember.
It's a geshmak part.
Yeah.
So the Chavetz Chaim says, Nebuchadnezzar took 3.5 steps. No, azma. So look what he says. Nebuchadnezzar was rewarded because he defended Melech Malchim, Lachim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He became a great Melech. Not only did he become a great Melech, b'zchus the steps that he took, his descendants became the royal family. So look what happened here. Look at the last paragraph. B'kach muvan be'ezes chus zach savashti limloch la'achar shemoch la'avoseh shlosh z'malachim. Who's Vashti? Nebuchadnezzar, Evil Merodach, Belshazzar, Vashti. Vashti is the fourth generation. So if Nebuchadnezzar takes a full fourth step, says Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara, what? Il mali ba Gavriel, had a real not come, lo hayu takano sonem shel Yisrael, that would have been the end of the Jewish people. You know why? Because Vashti never would have gotten removed from her position. And Esther never would have come to power. And the Jews never would have been saved. So Vashti only had half a malucha. She was the queen, but only for a limited period of time. Yeah? Because Nebuchadnezzar never finished taking that fourth step. Go to the last page. Who saves the day? Who stops Nebuchadnezzar from taking that step? Who stops Nebuchadnezzar? The Malach Gavriel. Where do we re-encounter the Malach Gavriel in the Purim story? Says the Gemara in Pesach Megillah, Yud Beis Amud Beis, in the second paragraph on page 10. We'll end with this. B'masnisa Tana, the Gemara says, B'Gavriel Vasa Zano Al-Metzcha. Vashti came, and what did the Gavriel do? As my daughter Meira Rivka taught me this week, Vashti had a tail. I said, yes, Meira, Vashti had a tail. Don't let them convince you that Vashti didn't really have a tail. How do they know? People who claim don't, it's not meant to be taken literally. How do you know? Says who? No, seriously, says who? Steal the joy of these little children. Let them think Vashti had a tail. Is it possible that some Rishonim learned things midrashim like that? Right? Meaning, it's all called Medrash, it's a Gemara, but I'm saying Drash. Is it possible that some Rishonim learned it not to be taken literally? Of course. The Chavetz Chaim is about to tell us it's not to be taken literally. But don't let's not assume it can't be literal. It could be literal. The Malach came and he put a tail, right? But also Zonav al Mitzvah. He put a tail on her forehead. What's the Pshat? And who was it? The Malach of Riel. The same Malach of Riel is back. What's a tail? What does a tail represent? The end, that's correct. The Malach came and said, this is the end of the line, this is the end of Nebuchadnezzar's chos. This is where he runs out. What's the pshat in this Gemara? It's a strange thing. Well, where did they get this from? The ilu lefid vareinu, but says the Chavetz Chaim, according to our explanation, it's beautiful. Harisha Gavriel, otzer b'shasso as Nebuchadnezzar, the same Gavriel who stopped Nebuchadnezzar for taking that fourth and final step, umana b'kach shevashti tamshich limloch, that Vashti should not be able to complete her malucha, who stopped that fourth step, comes along and places a tail, the aruch, right? The great Rishon dictionary, the aruch, writes that a zanav means the end of something. Az b'shasha atzer esaviyah. That was the end of the zchus in Nebuchadnezzar. Yeah? And he ends through the last three lines. He says, Ramaz l'kach yitachin ulai limtso v'milam shachashverosh says to Esther, ad chatzi ha-malchus v'inosin lach. You could have up to half the malchus. Why? Shechein lo ho'ida ha-ashkochas mechitzasa ha-shniya shal malchuso la'achar vashi. Shemalcha b'machtis ha-rishona. Esther, you're only entitled to half the malchus. You know why? Because you're really filling in for the second half of Vashti's career, which was taken away because Nebuchadnezzar couldn't take that final step. Just an amazing drasha. And again, for all the you know, pashuta ideas, the Chavetz Chaim tells us al derech avoda, to not forget that the Chavetz Chaim was a very creative and brilliant Talmud Chacham who was able to resolve this medrash to A, find the Gemara, to find the other gears in the medrash, to resolve it in such a clever way, and to show it's Gavriel as Yitasso, the same Gavriel who stopped Nebuchadnezzar, the same Gavriel who put the tail in Vashti, and to explain this idea of the tail, and to tie it into Esther's half malucha, is an amazing thing. Okay, shkoyach. We should be zorich to a simcha filled Adar Sheni, and a freilich in Purim.